Well, everybody knows the old saying, two wrongs don't make a right, but do they? Hi, everybody. I'm Bill Whittle here with Steve Green and Scott Ott, and this is Your Right Angle on a complex subject, so forgive me for the setup. It's an important subject. I think it's something we all need to understand. I've seen three talks within the last 2 days, and they all actually tie together, so let me just explain to you what I'm trying to get at here. I saw a talk given by a gentleman who talked about artificial intelligence and how much more intelligent artificial intelligence already is when it comes to extremely large data sets. He showed a picture taken from a drone looking down on a city. It might have been something like Santa Barbara or something like that. And it was like watching Google Maps, except everything was in motion, everything was in real time, and there was a little box around every car, a little box around every person. The artificial intelligence system knew who every person was in that picture. It was able to determine where they were coming from, where they were going, and so on. And only artificial intelligence is smart enough to put together a picture like that. And this is not something that might happen someday. This is already in place. So, number one, the idea of massive collections of data about all of our movements should be alarming. And just to give you an idea of alarming, this gentleman pointed out that we talk about facial recognition. He said facial recognition was interesting 20 years ago when people would walk into a casino and a videotape would capture your face and computer would say, oh, from the eyes, distance of the nose and so on. This is obviously famed internet commentator Bill Whittle came here. But what this gentleman said was it's not what facial recognition is anymore. Now, personal identification is done from the top of your head because that's where the surveillance is coming from. By looking down on you, by measuring the distance between your ears, the shape of your cranium, the length of your stride, the way you stride, the rhythm of your stride, you are being identified from above. That's how they're being identified. So that's number one. Number two was an article I saw about Obama and Google basically getting together to determine the news and what people see. And so one of the results of this world of big data that we live in, we're experiencing this and have for quite a while now at BillWhittle.com, we talk about the suppression of conservative ideas and the suppression of conservative videos. As this data gets more and more complete, and as these extremely left-wing progressive industry giants like Google know more and more about us, they will be able to put in front of us what they want us to have in front of us. And they will accomplish the goal of Big Brother in a way that we never imagined. They will make us do what we want. They will make us do what they want us to do, but they will do it in such a way that we feel like we want this, that it's our own choice, the ultimate tyranny. And those two things should alarm somebody enormously. And here's the third talk, and this is why I wanted to bring this up, gents. I saw a TED talk recently about a gentleman who was talking about the dark web, the dark internet. There is an internet out there that exists beneath the internet that we see. You can't get to it on Chrome or Safari or any of these other things. You have to have a special browser, I think called Tor, to get there. And just to give you an idea of this dark internet, you know, if you want to go to BillWhittle.com, you type in BillWhittle.com, but the addresses of these websites are something like 50 or 60 characters of absolutely random numbers and letters, and it's encrypted. On the dark internet, you can see child pornography, and on the dark internet, to take a somewhat more palatable example, you can buy cocaine, heroin, marijuana at shopping sites where you have a cart and you check out, and the sellers are rated the same way they're rated on eBay by reliability, and there's customer feedback and all the rest. You pay for this not with your credit card, because that probably would not be a good idea. You buy bitcoins, which is a crypto currency. It's an online currency. And then what they pointed out was, well, if you buy bitcoins with your credit card and then you use those bitcoins to buy this illegal stuff, then they can trace you. So what they do is they have a place where you take 100 of your bitcoins and you put in 100 bitcoins, and it shuffles them up with thousands or millions of other bitcoins from other people, and then gives you back 100 bitcoins, none of which have your credit card information on them, and now you have complete anonymity to buy whatever you want to. So sorry about the long setup, but it's a big, big topic, and it's an important topic. So Scott, do two wrongs make a right? In other words, does the technology, the encryption technology designed to keep you private, that was developed specifically so that you could perform illegal, illicit, and immoral activities, that technology is now making its way into the mainstream and will protect us against this data harvesting of everything that we do. Is it possible that this lesser evil of all of the negative things on the dark net have produced a technology that will protect us from what I think is an enormous danger, which is this, not just surveillance, it's complete understanding of everything we do. It's a recording of every mouse click we ever made. It's the ability to show us what we want to see, and it's the ultimate form of tyranny.
You know, I can see about half of our audience at this point going, we're going to need more gold, ammo, and non-GMO seeds.
More gold and ammo is never a bad idea.
You know, I think even though this sounds all newfangledy and scientific and science fiction-ish, in reality, something like this happens in every generation where people start saying, holy cow, do you realize the untrammeled power of this? I mean, did you know that in the 1950s, advertisers were able to get people to buy things that even they didn't want, but they thought they wanted them, and so they went out and bought them. And so, you know, now obviously it's getting more advanced, it's getting more intrusive, and there's something inherent in the human being that says, wait a minute, you know, it's one thing to say AI is intelligent enough to take that overview of a community and label every home, every person, every car. It's another thing to have an intelligence that is smart enough to say, hey, maybe you shouldn't be doing that. You know? I am very impressed with the advances in artificial intelligence. I am less impressed with the advances in natural intelligence over the years. There is a little thing one used to call wisdom that has to do with bringing to bear not just experience and ability, but also morality into a combination that says, even though I can, should I? If I am capable, to what extent should I carry this? We are capable of much more as a society right now, and our government is capable of much more than they're actually doing. And we don't always take advantage of our capabilities to the ultimate degree. There's something that the reformers of Christianity used to call general grace or universal grace, I forget what it was, which is basically the power that God exercises even over people who are non-believers to keep everything from just flying apart at the seams, from everything going to the nth degree of evil at every opportunity. Even evil people don't always maximize their potential for evil. I think that we also have seen the other thing, Bill, that this brings to mind is the fact that no matter what technology is developed for ill use, there's always somebody who wants to use it for good and vice versa.
I think. What if that's a pornographer?
There is. What's that?
What if it's a pornographer?
Yeah, well, and that's exactly like the internet in many ways has grown to adapt to the need to have higher resolution video, driven in to a certain extent by pornography. On the other hand,
bandwidth is driven by pornography, and video games drove the video.
Whether that's absolutely true or just associative rather than actual, you know, correlation rather than causation, I don't know. But I do know this, that technology has been driven forward by a variety of means, and it allows us to do this show right now, which I think is an unalloyed and unmitigated good.
Yeah, baby.
Well said. Steve, I spoke to somebody who's become a new friend of mine recently, and he had just read, in his mid-30s, had just read 1984 and was just shocked at how predictive it was. There's an awful lot in that book that is absolutely pure genius, but when they made the movie version of the book, which was excellent, it was made in 1984 with John Hurt. Very good version.
And Burton played...
Richard Burton, right, the interrogator.
Whose name I can't remember.
Okay, so here's the thing. The big reveal, the shocking reveal in the movie, the thing that makes you simply gasp in the movie, is at that point when Winston Smith realizes that his television also has a camera in it and that he has been watched and recorded the whole time. That comes as a shock. It is just simply, oh my God, there's a camera behind the television? All of the stuff we've been having this conversation about is recorded? And I remember seeing that movie, and I said, I'll be damned if I ever let a television like that into my house. And then I realized, now I realize, I've probably got 5 or 6 televisions in my house that I put there on purpose. In fact, I paid big money to have those televisions in my house. I've got a television on my iPhone. I got a television on my iPad. I got a television on my computers, a couple of PCs and so on. My wife has televisions on them as well, on her devices. I invited them into my home. They can be activated at any time. The little red light doesn't have to be on. It is possible to turn on your video camera and hear and see everything, which is why those people who put the little piece of tape over that webcam when they don't want it have actually found a situation that is virtually impossible to work around. It's actually very simple, very practical, very mechanical, very second wave, and it works.
Yes.
But my question to you is this. We have invited so much of this into our lives. Facebook and Google are the powers that they are because we pay them to do it.
We,
is this in fact something we need to be worried about, or is this just the way the world is going to be, and we're just kind of Luddites worrying about people having all of this information about us?
So much to chew on here. I want to start with just a minor correction. The big reveal in 1984 wasn't that the telescreen was two ways. Everybody knew that. That was part of the control mechanism of the English socialist state. Their big reveal was when Winston Smith was first talking with the interrogator guy, whose name just escapes me, and I just reread the book last year, is when he still thought they were allies, you know, in the underground movement. And because his future interrogator was an upper party member, he reached over and switched off the telescreen. Smith had never...
I did not recall that.
Smith had never been in a room where the telescreen was off.
And I'm glad you corrected me on that.
And that was a huge deal, and it kind of sealed their alliance, which of course was then betrayed, and all the rest.
I bet he didn't really turn it off either.
Yeah, I'm sure he didn't. Listen, yeah, we have invited these into our home. We accepted the Faustian bargain, the deal with the devil. We get all of these free services, and in exchange, we surrender our every single mouse click to these data farms. Everything you type in to the URL bar goes into the data farm. Everything it all goes in there. And it, as Scott says, the AI is getting very sharp, and us, maybe not so much. But the 1984 analogy only goes so far, really. I think the more appropriate one might be Brave New World, which was a happy, or at least on the surface, a happy and very wealthy futuristic society where there was never any trouble because everybody had their soma. They got their little dose of happy pills or happy drinks, however they took it, and never had to worry or fret about a single thing, and the great big state took care of everybody's needs. And what we have now, I think, is a digital soma. We have the little screens in our pockets. We've got the big screens on our desks. We've got the bigger, this medium-sized screen on our lap all the time. And it feeds us these things that we call up magically through the ether. And it's a wonderful, amazing thing. But what we've given up in exchange for this is it's kind of a big deal for anybody with any kind of aggressive intentions against us. What you can do, and what I'm about to say, I'm not endorsing any company or any product, especially because I'm about to talk about Apple. I've got a lot of their stuff. I've got some issues with Tim Cook when he talks about things that don't concern the company and its products. I think in some ways some of their software has gone downhill. However, at the Worldwide Developer Conference here just a couple of weeks ago, Cook did show that the company is serious about privacy. You talk about these underground tools that people who know how to work Tor can use. We're also getting some out in the open tools that I think matter. The new versions of macOS and iOS that are going to come out in September or October will effectively anonymize as best as can be done your phone or your Mac from all of this internet tracking. It was a body blow, really, this announcement, and nobody was talking about this, was a body blow against Facebook and Google, because instead of being able to ID your Mac or your iPhone based on things they can suck out of your individual device, they're going to make every iPhone look like every other iPhone to Google. They're going to make every Mac look like every other Mac to Facebook, etc. And that's an important tool. And I think rather than say, oh, go buy Apple stuff, which I'm not going to do, I will say when you make your buying decisions, look for companies that are selling you on privacy, because that's a very big deal. And it's really going to hurt the bottom lines of these companies like Google and Facebook. And that is what we've got to do, Bill. We've got to take that money away from them and take that power away from them. So look for privacy as a selling point, not just gigahertz or screen resolution.
Okay, so let's just close by talking about whether this is a real threat or not. There's no question that they're collecting data about us. You could say they're doing this for commercial purposes. I certainly didn't agree to this, so that alone is nefarious. Secondly, we know that people like Zuckerberg and the people at Google are, without question, suppressing political opinions that they don't agree with, so we already know that they are no moral code or base about them. There's nothing like this idea that this is objective. We know that it's political. We know it's politicized. We're suffering from it here at this company, and other people are out of business because people with enormous amounts of power over you because of the information they have on you have decided that they don't like this kind of commentary, and so they've decided to suppress it. So their motive is no longer in doubt. Their motive is not honorable, and so there you go. They have the technology, and they have the proven track record of using that technology in order to gain a political outcome at the expense of other people with different opinions, and that is tyranny. So I don't think that case needs to be made. I think the only thing here that's interesting is the idea that the technologies that can protect us against this were in large part, and continue to be in large part, developed by a system that was trying to evade scrutiny because of illegal activities that they were conducting. So the question is, do two wrongs make a right? And I think, really, the question itself is flawed. I think the reason it's flawed is this. We are attributing a moral characteristic to a technology. And this is a very, very bad mistake. This is exactly what the left does with an AR-15. They have determined that the AR-15 is an evil thing. And they do not simply understand that it is inert. It has no judgment, has no morals, it has no ability to take action on its own. It's a thing. And that's where we have to go, I think, in the answer to this question. If most of this technology was developed to protect illegal drug sales and child pornography, that's not the technology's fault. And the result of that is not tainted by any moral activity because it has no moral ability of its own. It's a thing that was created. So I think that we need to be using this technology aggressively and as quickly as possible. I think it's very, very important that we put an end to this surveillance of everything we do and say and think. I think already, even those of us that are watching shows like this, we are unaware of how much we are influenced every day by the things that are put in front of us and how they're portrayed. So I say, in this particular case, it's not a question of right and wrong. It's a question of a technology that's being used for evil purposes, and we need to use it for good purposes. And there never ceases to amaze me how, on a meta scale, in terms of not individual technologies or softwares, but just on the big, big scale, there always seems to be a balance and a choice between good and evil that individual people will be able to make. It always seems to, on some level, balance itself out where a tremendous, tremendously dangerous, evil opportunity suddenly produces an equal opportunity for good. It's almost enough to make you think somebody's kind of refereeing things and got a plan for how this stuff's going to work out. If this technology is coming, and I highly recommend that you use it as soon as possible, find whatever encryption you can, all of these things are in fact almost impossible to defeat. They've made a machine that they don't understand themselves, and that means that they don't understand how to get into the locks that they've created. So they made our chains, they made our locks, and they also made a key that they can't take away from us, and that's what we have to use in order to get through this next couple of 100 years as a free people. Thank you very much for joining us on BillWhittle.com and Right Angle. I know there's a lot to chew on sometimes, but that's why we love talking to you people, and it's always a pleasure, and we look forward to it. It's made possible by the paying members at BillWhittle.com. It's not a 70-string random set of numbers. It's just B-I-L-L, W-H-I-T-T-L-E, period, C-O-M. And if you want to become a member to keep these things coming, we'd be glad to have you. Thanks very much. We'll see you next week on Right Angle.